Have you ever been in a situation where, things just feel off, like the ground shifting under your feet, maybe a relationship when you really trusted starts to feel, well, unsettling, or you find yourself doubting your own memory after a chat? We've all hit those confusing moments, right? When things turn sour, or you just suspect something isn't quite right, that feeling, maybe long-term trust just fading away, or wondering, am I being gaslit here? It's a really, really tough place to be, disorienting. So today we're going to take a deep dive. We want to explore how you can navigate these really complex waters with integrity and with strength. Our goal here for this deep dive is to pull out some actual actionable steps, ethical ways to understand what's happening and how to respond, but without making things worse, not sensationalizing it. The focus is on getting you clarity, confidence, and keeping your integrity intact when, well, when situations often try to take those away. We've looked into some really valuable insights. They come from a trauma-informed, evidence-aware course that's specifically designed for this stuff, grounded frameworks, practical strategies. Now, this source material, it grabbed my attention right away. It talks about things like long-term trust erosion, suspected gaslighting, or even patterns that feel like coordinated harassment. Well, I mean, these aren't small disagreements, are they? They sound like they have a huge impact. So what makes these experiences so disorienting? That's the word the source uses. Why that word specifically?
It is a powerful word, disorienting. And it really gets to the heart of it. What's so crucial to get is how manipulation, and especially gaslighting, it messes with your reality, fundamentally blurs it. When your own perceptions are constantly questioned, maybe your memories are subtly rewritten by someone else, or your feelings are just brushed off as, overreacting. It doesn't just confuse you for a moment. It systematically undermines your trust in yourself, shakes your very foundation. The course calls these complex interpersonal breaches or contested group dynamics. And that's key because it's often not just one single thing. It can be this like pervasive quality. Think about it, right? You remember a conversation, a promise, and then you're told, nope, never happened. Or you're just imagining that.
Yeah.
If that happens again and again over time, you start to doubt yourself. Seriously, doubt yourself, your sanity even. That's the power, the sort of insidious nature of gaslighting. And like you said, it's not just personal relationships. It could be weird group dynamics or pressure online, offline, designed to isolate someone, maybe undermine them. The course points out anyone can be affected. Someone betrayed by a friend, sure, but also maybe community leaders, caregivers, people become targets. So the disorientation, it comes from that sneaky, hard to pin down nature. Makes it really tough to figure out what's really going on and therefore how to even respond.
Wow. Yeah, that really deepens the understanding of disorientation. If your reality is being warped like that, I mean, where do you even start to untangle it? Now, the course we're drawing from, it really hammers home this idea of ethical practice as a core thing. What does that actually mean, though, when you're dealing with something so raw, so personal, like betrayal or harassment? It feels like your gut reaction might be, well, anything but ethical sometimes.
That's a really critical point. You're right. Our first reaction, often driven by emotion, right? It can lead us places we regret later. So this ethics-first guidance from the source, it isn't about being passive. It's not turn the other cheek. It's more like giving you a compass. When everything else feels chaotic, it means trying to balance being open-minded, willing to see other viewpoints, even if you totally disagree with sharp critical thinking. You need to tell truth from manipulation. It involves respecting different beliefs, which, yeah, can be incredibly hard in these moments. But the absolute core of it, focusing on verifiable actions.
Verifiable actions. Okay.
Yeah, that's the cornerstone. Grounding your response in facts, in principles, not just raw emotion or lashing out. So, for instance, instead of just saying you're being manipulative, don't use broad, right? You focus on specifics. On this date, you said X. Then on that date, you denied it, even though here's the email. See? Evidence. This approach, it actively helps stop things escalating just based on feelings or guesswork. And it helps you rebuild stability without, blowing things out of proportion. It's really about protecting your integrity, your own moral compass, your long-term well-being. Even when maybe the other person isn't acting with integrity, it's actually a strategic choice. Navigating this tough stuff in a way that matches your values, that ultimately makes your own position, your own story stronger. It's quite empowering, actually, to choose integrity when you're hurting.
Choosing integrity as your guide.
Yeah, I can see how vital that would be, especially when emotions are just boiling over. Does the course offer like specific mental tools
yeah.
or frameworks to help maintain that integrity when you're feeling really raw. It does, actually. It talks about something called critical incident debriefing protocols.
Hmm.
It's basically a structured way to process what happened. You focus on the facts, then your immediate reactions, and then this is key, how your actions lined up with your own ethical framework. It's a proactive method, really. Helps you stay self-aware and accountable to your own values, even when things feel chaotic.
That sounds like a really solid framework. Okay, so moving towards more hands-on stuff, the source mentions some very practical skills. One really stood out to me, mapping relationship histories and betrayal timelines. Mm-hmm. How does that help bring clarity? And maybe neutrality, it sounds a bit clinical almost for something so personal.
It might sound clinical, yeah, but it's precisely that bit of objective distance that makes it so useful, so empowering. Mapping these timelines, it helps you spot those coercive patterns, but responsibly. You're bringing an objective lens to something that feels intensely subjective and emotional. So instead of just this vague feeling of betrayal, you're actually looking at specific incidents, verifiable things, patterns over time. It helps you move past the feeling and identify concrete behaviors, dates, messages, actions. You essentially build a narrative grounded in evidence.
Right, facts instead of just feelings.
Exactly. And that's vital for spotting manipulation, gaslighting, or those coercive group things.
Yeah.
By laying out a timeline, you can literally see how certain behaviors showed up, maybe got worse, or kept repeating. Which brings up that important question you hinted at. How do we spot these patterns responsibly without just jumping to conclusions? Well, you look for repetition, consistent themes across different situations, specific examples you can actually point to. It's about seeing a pattern of behavior, not just one-off incidents. Lets you see the individual trees and the whole forest, if that makes sense. And that shift from confusion to informed understanding, that can be absolutely transformative.
That is incredibly powerful. Moving from just a feeling to a factual timeline.
Yeah.
Yeah, having that clarity must feel so empowering. I'm also curious about another skill the course brings up, evaluating symbolic or spiritual narratives without jumping to conclusions. That sounds quite specific. How do you actually do that, and why is it important here?
Yes. This is subtle, but really critical and often missed. Sometimes individuals or groups who manipulate, they use powerful stories,
yeah.
symbolic ones, spiritual ones, maybe highly moral narratives, to control people, disorient them, or demand total loyalty. Think about grand claims,
yeah.
things you can't really verify, like a shared destiny or divine messages or some moral mission that means you have to obey, no questions asked. So the course suggests evaluating these narratives without jumping to conclusions. It means using the same critical thinking you'd use for, say, a financial claim. You're not necessarily judging the belief itself. That's not the point. It's about how that belief or narrative is being used. Is it being used to control behavior? To shut down questions? Ask yourself, is this story being used to dismiss actual evidence? Is it presented like an absolute truth you're not allowed to question? Does it demand an emotional reaction that overrides clear thinking or ethical behavior? So, for example, if someone says, I had a spiritual insight, so you need to give me this money, or my insight says you must cut off contact with your family, the skill is to critically look at the consequences of that claim, the verifiability, not get tangled up in arguing about the spiritual insight itself. It helps stop you being manipulated further or disoriented by these big stories that aren't actually grounded in reality or ethical actions.
That makes so much sense. Recognizing when a belief stops being just belief and becomes a tool for control, not just genuine conviction. Okay, so beyond understanding all these dynamics, the source talks about taking real, tangible steps for safety. Things like conducting personal risk assessments and practicing digital hygiene. These might not be the first things people think of,
yeah.
but wow, they sound important.
Oh, they absolutely are. These are the proactive steps. This is where understanding turns into action. Doing a personal risk assessment, it sounds formal, but it's really about taking an honest but calm look at potential dangers. Vulnerabilities in your specific situation. It's not about panic or fear-mongering. It's about figuring out proportionate safety steps. You look at the risk. Is
yeah.
it emotional damage, financial risk? Is physical safety actually a concern? And then you take practical, reasonable steps to lower that risk. Could be anything from, you know, changing your routine slightly, avoiding certain places, to locking down your personal info or blocking certain contacts.
Makes sense. Proportional steps.
Exactly. And this is where it gets super practical. The importance of digital hygiene and creating credible contemporaneous documentation.
Yeah.
I mean, so much happens online now, right? Protecting your digital self is crucial. That means things like updating passwords, checking privacy settings everywhere, being really careful what you share online, knowing how to block or report harassment effectively. and that documentation piece.
Yeah.
A clear factual record, dates, times, exactly what happened, exact quotes if possible, screenshots. This is an incredibly powerful tool for your protection and for any potential future paths you might need to take. It gives you an undeniable, verifiable record that's invaluable, both for your own clarity and if you need to involve anyone else.
Yeah, the power of a clear, factual record. I think a lot of us underestimate that. It just builds just a solid foundation for your own perspective. Now, the course also mentions getting outside help. What does it say about when and how to seek legal guidance and community resources? That can feel huge, overwhelming even.
It really can feel daunting, which is why the course aims to provide some specific guidance. It helps you figure out when thinking about legal advice might be a necessary proportional step. Not the first step, maybe, but a necessary one. For instance, if there's money involved, like financial exploitation, or if your physical safety is genuinely at risk, or maybe you're facing formal accusations, reputational damage that could affect your job. The course stresses that just talking to a legal professional early on, like a consultation, it doesn't commit you to some big lawsuit. It's about getting clear on your options, understanding your rights, learning what kind of evidence you'd need if you ever did decide to go down that road. It gives you knowledge, which is power, instead of just guessing.
Right. Information gathering first.
Exactly. And at the same time, building those supportive care networks. This is so, so important. You absolutely do not have to go through these things alone. That's a key message. So this means identifying support groups, maybe.
Great.
Locally, for people who've experienced emotional abuse or group pressure, or sometimes it's just having a trusted friend, a family member, a therapist you can talk to honestly. These outside supports, they give you perspective, validation, practical advice sometimes, and just crucial emotional strength when you're running low. They can be that reality check when your own view is being messed with.
It really does sound like building a fortress,
but
one made of clarity and facts and support. So ultimately, the big goal seems to be designing a holistic personal risk management and resilience plan. What does that actually look like in practice? What are the key parts, according to the source?
Right. This holistic plan is basically pulling all these threads together, weaving them into a comprehensive shield, really, and a strategy for moving forward. It's fundamentally rooted in clear, actionable boundaries, consistent self-care, which isn't just bubble baths. It's about protecting your energy and well-being. And those practical safeguards we talked about, documentation, digital hygiene, the source really emphasizes that this plan is about empowering you, giving you a step-by-step approach to protect yourself and move forward with integrity. It helps you shift from always reacting, always on the defensive, to being proactive. It's not just about surviving the crisis, but actively building a foundation for long-term well-being and growth even.
Okay, and what about those boundaries? You mentioned boundaries.
Yes. Critical piece here is what the course calls trauma-informed boundaries. This is a really interesting concept. Unlike maybe standard boundaries, which might just focus on logical limits, trauma-informed boundaries explicitly recognize how past difficult experiences can make certain interactions feel unsafe, even if they seem okay on the surface. So they prioritize your emotional safety and regulation just as much as setting clear limits. For example, a standard boundary might be, "Don't speak to me that way." A trauma-informed one might add something like, "If you raise your voice, I will need to end this conversation immediately because that tone triggers a strong feeling of unsafety for me based on past experiences."
Ah, I see. It connects the boundary to the feeling, the impact.
Exactly. It's about being clear why the boundary is there and what it's protecting for you, not just what behavior it's stopping. And then crucially, these boundaries get reinforced by those care networks we mentioned. The friends, family, professionals who get it, who validate your choices, who back you up. The whole idea of the course seems to be providing these concrete tools tailored to your life to help you find that lasting clarity, confidence, and importantly, integrity.
What an incredibly thorough deep dive we've managed today. Wow. We went from trying to make sense of those really confusing situations, those complex breaches, that awful disorientation, to understanding the real power of taking an FX-first approach, even when it's hard. And then we got into the practical stuff, mapping timelines, the vital importance of documenting things carefully, building those support networks around you, and seeing how it all comes together in building that holistic resilience plan, one that really puts you back in the driver's seat. So what's the takeaway for you listening? I think it means that even when you're facing that long-term trust erosion or gaslighting patterns or harassment, there are ethical, structured ways to find your footing again to protect your well-being. This deep dive, it really highlighted a paced, practice-focused way forward with ethics-first guidance, step-by-step tools, things that can genuinely make a huge difference.
And maybe that leaves you with an important question to think about. In what ways could actively documenting what's happening, and setting those clear, trauma-informed boundaries. How could that transform that feeling of helplessness you might have? Transform it into a real, concrete path towards empowered action, towards restoring your own sense of integrity.
That's definitely something powerful to ponder as you go about your day, taking back control over your own story, your own safety. That's maybe one of the most powerful acts of self-care, of self-respect there is. We really hope this deep dive helps you even a little on that journey.